It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the rest of our program today, we're going to be talking about the severe storms that left a trail of destruction across parts of Illinois last Thursday. Many areas saw winds of up to 100 miles per hour. And according to the National Weather Service, parts of west central Illinois experienced winds of up to 120 miles an hour. There were at least five confirmed tornadoes as part of these storms. The damage was extensive. Power outages affected hundreds of thousands of people across the state. I have to say, my own family and household is on day six without power still. There are many downed trees. For some farmers, damaged crops. Even as we go on the air today, almost a week later, communities are still recovering. Officially, these storms have been classified as a derecho, and we'll get into what that means a little later. Joining us now to help us make sense of last week's storms is Andrew Pritchard, meteorologist for Illinois Public Media, our home station. He's also a storm chaser and photographer. Andrew, thanks as always for making the time to be with us.
Always happy to be here.
Reginald Hardwick is also with us. He's Director of News and Public Affairs at Illinois Public Media and my boss. Reginald, welcome back to you as well.
Good morning, Brian.
And we're joined by one of the farmers actually affected by last week's storms. Steve Turner is in Chandlerville in Cass County. He's also a committee chair for the Illinois USDA Farm Service Agency State Committee. Steve, welcome to the 21st Show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
And I should say we were hoping to be joined by Ameren or Springfield's electric utility, City Water, Light, and Power. We didn't hear back from Ameren in time for this conversation. CWLP said Wednesday isn't possible. We do have some tape, however, from Doug Brown, CWLP's chief utility engineer. There was a news conference in Springfield on Monday. He answered some of the questions we would have asked him, and we'll share some of that tape later in the conversation. But if you are experiencing the effects of the derecho, if you went through it, maybe in your basement, as I did, let us know what that experience was like at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Reginald, I'm going to start with you. Broadly speaking, overview-wise, what sort of damage did these storms leave behind?
I think in one word is extensive. From one side of Illinois to the other, these hurricane-force winds either uprooted trees or tossed their huge branches through homes or snapped power lines. At its peak, more than 200,000 Illinoisans were without power statewide, and that's with Ameren, Illinois, and Springfield CWLP. When you got into the neighborhoods, the damage was even more apparent. You know, snapped utility poles, live wires on the ground, tree branches, a real mess that had to be attended to by professionals. And immediately after the derecho, first responders dealt with downed power lines all over interstates. So on I-55 near Lincoln, they closed the highway into the night to clean up all the power lines, get things restrung. And then on I-57, south of Champaign, Urbana, there were a lot of semi-trucks that were just rolled over. And at Willard Airport, the U of I Airport in Savoy, south of Champaign, it was closed Thursday afternoon because the storm cut power to the airport and damaged part of the commercial terminal building's roof. So it was just widespread from border to border.
Yeah, and I mentioned how many people lost power. I think on Ameren's front, it was well over 100,000 customers. Doug Brown of Springfield's City Water, Light, and Power had this to say about the scale of the damage there.
I would say a disaster is probably an understatement at this point. The damage from the derecho storm is much worse, again, than the 2006 tornadoes, and is definitely closer to that of that ice storm of 78. The sheer magnitude of that damage is citywide. It's across our entire electric grid system.
So, Andrew, you visited an area that was particularly hard hit by these storms, Farmer City, which is about 35 minutes northwest of Champaign-Urbana. What did you see?
The damage was extensive, as Reginald said. I mean, we deal with severe storms on an annual basis here, and a lot of those bring significant winds. And so we're used to seeing these storms come through that knock a few branches out of the trees. Perhaps, you know, there's some power lines that are blown down out in the country. But this was an everywhere problem, and I saw it driving not just through Farmer City, but from Farmer City back to Champaign. And then on Saturday, I was driving south from Champaign down toward the Effingham area. And it's every single town you drive through, the same thing. pieces of trees, entire trees are knocked down. You know, power lines are down because of the trees, or in some cases, the power poles are blown down. And in Farmer City, there was damage to structures there. Some of this was, you know, the wind blowing shingles or siding off of homes. You also had trees that were blown down on homes and vehicles. So it was clear that this is a storm that just it was an entire league of its own there with the winds that it brought, not only the intensity, but the widespread nature.
Yeah. Steve, we need to take a break in about a minute, a little less than a minute, actually. But just briefly, what did you see and experience during Thursday's storms?
Well, fortunately enough, our family farm operation really had minimal damage, but we had it around the area. And when I say minimal, that compared to neighbors within 20, 30 miles at, you know, cornfields that were, you know, should be standing 8 feet tall, 7 feet tall, were literally blown flat. And believe me, that is a catastrophic loss. And I think that if anything we noticed there is how sporadic it was. If you were hit by that, it was definitely a big loss, and let alone some of the farm structures and everything, just like you mentioned, the power lines and some of the trees and everything. The same thing on farmsteads experienced that. But really the crop damage on the corn that was blown down real bad was really, really hit and miss. But when you start doing it, it starts adding up to a lot of acres when you start looking at it.
Yeah, sure does. All right, we're going to continue talking about last week's derecho when we return. This is the 21st show. Stay with us. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about last week's derecho that affected much of central Illinois, a line of severe thunderstorms. Sometimes these are referred to straight line winds, 100 or more miles per hour. There were also at least 5 tornadoes, massive power outages. Thousands and thousands of people were without power for days, and some still are. I'm looking at the city of Springfield's electric utility, City Water, Light, and Power. 5,186 households and businesses are still without power there as they are struggling to recover from the effects of this storm. I want to look back. Some people said that the word derecho was new to them. Others might remember we had one of these about 3 years ago. It was in August of 2020, and I was doing some reading about that. NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, estimates that that storm, again back in 2020, cost over $11 billion, and it is the most expensive thunderstorm event in modern U.S. history. So, Andrew, and I should say, we're talking about all of this with Andrew Pritchard, who is meteorologist for WILL, Illinois Public Media, our home station. Also, Reginald Hardwick, who's news director at IPM and has been covering this storm. Also, Steve Turner, who is a farmer in Cass County. So, Andrew, just put the concept of a derecho in some context for us. It's Spanish for to the right, or a la derecho, for those of us who had junior high Spanish.
Absolutely.
What is this?
Yeah, well, it might be helpful to kind of think about the context here, and that this is a term that we assign after the fact. It's, you know, similar to how we rate tornadoes, and we'll, you know, give a tornado a rating of an EF2 based on the damage that it caused. We don't necessarily know that a derecho is happening until it's happened, and
that's why there's no severe derecho warning.
Exactly. Okay. You know, we're typically forecasting the potential for severe storms, and so then we may see a cluster of storms that becomes a, you know, especially long-lived, especially damaging, you know, thunderstorm event. And so that's what we saw happen Thursday. That's what happened back in 2020. It's these clusters of storms that typically they develop out in the Great Plains. And, you know, it's sometimes sparked by a single storm out there the day before. And then that storm grows and it grows into a larger cluster and generates what's called a cold pool. And that helps it get some forward momentum there. And sometimes we wake up as Midwestern meteorologists and we see a troubling cluster of storms off to the west. And that's what happened Thursday with a hot and muggy environment out ahead of that. And so that storm system just continued to charge forward. And by the end of the day, we were talking about a derecho impacting central Illinois and also portions of Missouri, Iowa, and then down into Indiana.
and I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't know if you know the etymology. Is it because they move from the plains to the east, to the right on a map? That's where the duration
historically,
comes from?
Yes. Most of them travel left to right there.
Interesting. Let's talk a little bit more about the utility aspect of this, because we were wondering, and I should mention again, as I did before, we invited Ameren to join us, didn't hear back. CWLP said they couldn't make the live show on Wednesday, but we do have some tape of Doug Brown, who is with City Water, Light and Power, from a news conference, and we were wondering how power companies triage and decide what to restore when there is this much damage.
Our first focus was on cleaning main roads for safe travel for emergency crews and city crews. Then they started repowering main feeder circuits. These are the lines that go from our substations out to the general areas of the city. All but one feeder has been restored, and now we're focused on laterals, repowering those that have the largest amount of customers first. We did focus on medical facilities, nursing homes, grocery stores, as much as possible to get those on first.
All right. So they focus on medical facilities, hospitals, nursing homes. There are these main feeders. And then from there, they have to send power back out to other areas. At that news conference on Monday, he estimated it would be about a third of the remaining 10,000 or so at the time customers would have power back by yesterday, Tuesday, two thirds by Friday, and 90% power by the end of the day, Sunday. At that point, that would be a week and a half without power, potentially, and it could be longer for some customers. So, Reginald, what are some of the challenges that these utility crews were and really still are running into with getting power restored?
You know, there's about 2,000 workers and 20 out-of-state utility companies working with Ameren and I imagine with Springfield CWLP trying to get the power back on in many of these communities, especially a lot of the wooded communities and more ones that have a little more far out. You know, while I was interviewing families in Urbana on Monday, which was like the fourth day that they hadn't had power, it just happened a crew showed up. And I asked them, they were local, but their cherry picker truck was on loan from another company. And I noticed the license plate was actually from New Hampshire. So imagine, you know, first you're going to get the equipment from, you know, New Hampshire, faraway state. Also, by the way, this derecho didn't stop or end in Illinois. It was, you know, had gone through to Indiana and some other states. So you have, you know, various other communities also dealing with this. And what was typical, the tree limbs had, you know, just fallen, the power lines broke them off, you know, and they're just dealing with that block after block after block in Urbana. And it takes a while, you know, you got to make sure the wires aren't live, you know, whatever the situation is with the tree, make sure it's very stable and move that and then restring the power lines. And it just happened to be in that neighborhood. This was the second time in a month that the branches fell on the wires because the age of the trees, and we were just talking about drought. I think that has something to do with drying out the trees and everything, so they were a little more vulnerable. So, you know, it's just a lot of steps you got to go through to restore the power.
Yeah, and the city of Springfield said it imposed a curfew on Thursday evening of last week. And the mayor said that was because there were just so many live wires still down and the utilities were still dealing with that. We have another clip. May Antar, who's another reporter at IPM, spoke to Kylie McNew, a Danville resident who was without electricity for 4 days. Let's hear what she had to say.
So money-wise, it's really affected us. So, and I don't think they realized that part of it. It's not just about not having power, but for people that couldn't go to work and, you know, the food that they lost, like, what do we do?
Yeah, a lot of people emptying out full refrigerators. Steve, I want to come back to you now. As a farmer, we were talking about weather is one of the things that, you know, it's out of a farmer's control. So you mentioned some of your neighbors saw corn fields that were just laid flat. What does recovery look like after an event like this?
Well, the recovery, first of all, on the where it did flatten the corn fields is what can also be a problem is debris. Then not only the limbs, but you have shingles or parts of sheds blow off and it can just literally scatter through hundreds and hundreds of acres, and that really makes it worse because that type of debris is going to really damage any combine heads or what you try to do to harvest. A lot of that corn will try to stand back up, but it's going to be what's called goosed, and a lot of it probably will not stand up. But what I'm trying to say is the harvest is going to be very, very difficult, and they're going to lose crop. There'll be some of that crop, and let alone even if it matures and makes a crop. Some of this damage was done right before pollination, the key part of the corn. So first of all, that corn has to develop and make a crop. And if it does, it's going to have some problems getting harvested. But I will tell you, there are insurance products out here, wind and hail, that a lot of farmers, I know myself, I carry multi-peril crop insurance to handle drought losses, and also carry wind and hail insurance. So that's something farmers try to do to answer the risk out here, or alleviate the risk, and try to cover the financial losses that way, because it doesn't make you whole. There isn't an insurance product out here that will do that, and it's not designed to do that. So that's one thing that farmers have as a tool to try to be ready for something like this.
Absolutely. So, Andrew, I want to come back to you now, because we spoke a little earlier in the program with Molly Willison from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration about the role of climate change causing more extreme weather events. How does something like the derecho last week fit into that picture?
Well, it's when we talk about these extreme events and their links to climate change, I always bring it back to having the ingredients present. So, we can't necessarily say that going forward, a warming climate means we're going to have more unstable climate and more severe storms more frequently is not necessarily true. It may be true, though, that we have the ingredients in place to take these thunderstorm clusters from the plains and have them come running into a hot and muggy air mass out in front of it, as we saw last Thursday. There's also a pretty big link, between heat waves and derechos. And so if you think back to last week, early in the week, we were talking a lot about an extreme heat wave across the South, parts of Texas and, Oklahoma and to Arkansas and the deep South were dealing with extreme heat. And it's kind of along the northern axis of those extreme ridges of high pressure or extreme heat waves that we see these clusters of storms develop, and they'll kind of run along the rim of that and can produce a lot of damage along the way. So again, it's kind of just looking at it may be something that we have the ingredients in place, and this could be a whole conversation on the ability to forecast derechos even the day before. It becomes kind of a 50-50 shot here where we've got the ingredients, we need to watch this, and sometimes it's more of a reaction kind of thing. But yes, it's just all about having the ingredients in place and potentially these occurring more frequently.
And one of those ingredients is I understand we're moving into this El Nino cycle, right? La Nina is cooler Pacific Ocean temperatures. El Nino is warmer. The World Meteorological Organization said there's a 98% likelihood that at least out of the next 5 years, one of them is going to be the warmest on record, and just the whole period will probably be that way. Does that lend, to the possibility of more of these sorts of events?
Well, so there's an interesting way to look at this. I mean, with the El Nino, we've typically got a stronger, more southerly jet stream. And so we always had the makings of a stormy and active summer in the Midwest, which was what made kind of the dry start here a bit frustrating. We were watching, what always looked like in the next 2 weeks, we're going to have a really strong push from the jet stream to bring a storm system in. We'll have more frequent rains, and that continued to be pushed off to the south of us. So, that was part of the equation last week. We saw exceptionally strong jet stream winds. And when we see that during the summer months, we've got the fuel for thunderstorms. And typically in the summer, the jet stream is much weaker. With an El Nino, it's more likely that we see stronger jet stream winds into the summer. And so we finally brought some stronger upper level winds into the region that, that manifested in an especially strong cluster of thunderstorms that produced a lot of damage. So we expect to see that continuing at times through the summer and into the fall. So it may be that we finally see that flip over to a stormier pattern that I know you and Molly were talking about. The drought's not over. We need to continue to push this into a more consistently rainy pattern. And we do have the makings for that, and that could come with storms as well.
Yeah. Steve, I guess probably the last question we're going to have time for today. How does this, potential for more variable weather, unpredictable weather, and extremes at the same time, right? You get a ton of rain dumped on you in the middle of a drought. It doesn't really help all that much from the drought conditions. Even though I said, I know you said that your storm dodged some of the worst effects of this, or your farm dodged some of the worst effects of the storm. How are you and, farmers around you thinking about climate change?
Well, we think about climate change, and I think meteorologists on your today here have covered it, in my opinion, very well about like this rain we just got. Yeah, it seems like a lot of them come too hard anymore. I don't know, we're in a pattern of that, but one rain doesn't break a drought, and they know that, and any farmer out here knows it. I could answer it by looking at the lack of rain. If I hadn't have gotten this rain, I would have really been looking at getting into pretty sizable yield reductions on my crops, especially corn. This rain, as I like to use the phrase, soaked in like a sponge, even though it came hard, but we're still going to need more just because of our subsoil moistures are very dry all through Illinois. And I'm seeing that. In other words, those roots on our plants, especially corn, have already, I can use the phrase, sap that moisture up already. So these storm fronts, yeah, as long as we've got to deal with the bad weather, the winds and everything else, we also realize we got to take the good with the bad to get the moisture we need. And because without it, this really helped the crop out and helped mine out, but we're still going to need some rains here to help get us through so we can have a good crop for this year. Or same token, lack of it, we can still go backwards on this corn crop and soybean crop and other crops and have a disappointment. But that's part of farming. We're in the middle of the growing season, so we'll see how the last half of it goes.
Yeah. All right. Steve Turner, a farmer in Cass County, Reginald Hardwick with IPM, and Andrew Pritchard, the WILL meteorologist. Thank you all so much for being with us today. I do want to acknowledge we had a listener who is challenging our etymology of derecho, says it means straight, whereas it's derecha that means right. I don't know. We'll have to look into that and get back to you on these crucial matters. Maybe when my electricity comes back on, I will Google that question. For now, I want to thank all of our guests and thank you for those who called in and texted, and keep in touch with us at talk@21stshow.org. We love hearing what you thought about our program every day. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.